There is nothing new to be discovered, but there's everything to be rediscovered. Mm. And I think when you kind of look at it that way, you go, I mean, for instance, Michael DeBakey, one of the fathers of heart and vascular surgery in Texas, back in the 50s and 60s, when cholesterol came, you know, into the forefront, he always used to say, look, cholesterol has nothing to do with heart disease. It's an innocent bystander. And, you know, just get off of this. It's gotten trapped in an inflammatory process, but it didn't cause the inflammation.
And what caused the inflammation?
So, for one thing, if you have a little wheat germ agglutinin stuck to the inside of your blood vessel like a splinter, that's a really good cause of inflammation. Mm. So, you know, and I wrote about this in Longevity Paradox. Let's suppose I'm an alien sent to orbit the Earth to, you know, send back to High Command my observations.
Yes.
And one of the things that I could send back to High Command is I've been watching the freeways in LA, you know, and I can tell you without a doubt that ambulances are the cause of accidents. Mm. Because every time there's an accident, I see an ambulance.
Right.
And so,
interesting.
So again, causation is not correlation. Correlation is not causation.
Yeah.
So we could make an observation, which I could make in the operating room every day, that I see cholesterol plaque on the inside of that artery. So cholesterol must have caused that plaque. But DeBakey would say no. Cholesterol is basically a callus that is piling up on an irritation to mm-hmm. protect that underlying structure.
Yeah.
And that's why we see these plaques regress when you take away the irritation. Just like if you stop lifting weights, guess what? Your callus goes away.
So how do you take away the irritation?
Stop eating those things. We should be eating for our microbiome, period. Because our microbiome constitutes the vast majority of genes in our body. 99% of all the genetic material that exists in us and on us is non-human genetic material.
Right.
And our microbiome has the distinct advantage of rapidly reproducing and constantly changing and exchanging information from one bacteria to another. And so I happen to think that we've uploaded most of our decision-making processes to our bacterial cloud to take the work off of our genes, because these guys, in the new book, The Energy Paradox, we now know that that system, that microbiome, literally gives instructions which we now can measure. We've broken the code. We've only speculated that they've done this, but now I didn't break the code, but scientists have broken the code of how, in fact, they talk to us and direct us. We really exist for our microbiome. And as long as...
And what are microbiome?
The microbiome are the bacteria, the fungi, the yeast, the bugs. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we just had no idea. When I was in medical school and up until the Human Microbiome Project, we assumed that the GI tract, the stomach and intestines, was just this hollow tube, and you put some digestive enzymes in there, and all of a sudden, you know, you got proteins, you got fats, and you got carbohydrates, and then whatever was left, the garbage, you pooped out your rear end, and
that was it.
That was
what we thought before 10 years ago.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, they went, holy cow. And for instance, there were books written about the gut-brain axis, because we knew that the second largest collection of neurons was lining the gut. And there's more neurons lining the gut than there are in the spinal cord. So it was called the second brain. Well, now... As you'll see in The Energy Paradox, we were wrong about that. Those neurons are there to actually get messages from the microbiome and then talk to the brain. So we missed the fact that there was this symbiotic, sentient being that was not only living in us, but was directing us. We know if you have, for instance, fat and sugar-loving bacteria, which I call gang members, they will hijack your brain and make you go find those
more
foods
sugar, more fat, yeah,
that they want to
eat.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. We are overfed, mm-hmm, but undernourished.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, we have more conveniences, more everything. We have more food. We have, you know, we have energy bars, we have energy drinks, and everybody needs 5 cups of coffee to get through the day. And it's like, what a paradox. Mm-hmm. We should have the most energy of any species ever. We should have a lot more energy than those Sardinians who are climbing up hills in their 90s. But we can't, you know, we can't get out of bed.
Wow.
Without a double espresso. And okay, it's all because we stopped taking care of our microbiome. You have a war going on in your intestines. And as things come across the wall of your gut, your immune system, 70 to 80% of all your white blood cells are down in your gut. And a war gets started. And interestingly enough, the army has to have provisions. And we store fat, particularly in our gut, as provisions for our army. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I've published data that the war on the inside of our blood vessels, on our coronary arteries, we have fat, epicardial fat, lining our blood vessels. And that epicardial fat isn't there in people who don't have coronary artery disease. So that is the stockpile for fueling the army. So if you stop leaky gut, you lose weight. And, you know, and that's, I think we talked about this last time.
Yeah.
So one of the problems with COVID-19 and chronic diseases is that, my humble opinion and others, is that all chronic diseases stem from leaky gut. And our immune system is distracted by everything that's going on down here, and we don't have a lot of troops up where they ought to be in our nose and mouth. And when COVID hits and gets, then you have a hyper response, a cytokine storm, because your immune system, it's like the peanut allergy. It's like, oh my gosh, there's a silly little peanut antigen. Let's go crazy. And so it's these unfortunate people who, you know, have obesity, who have diabetes, who have insulin resistance. And, you know, 80% of Americans are insulin resistant, metabolic syndrome.
Mm.
And so it's kind of, people go, well, you know, America's, you know, not doing very well with COVID. Well, we are the perfect setup for COVID. But I think one of the things I think we should learn is that the countries and even our states that really draconianly shut down and practice social distancing and practice mask wearing. Look, masks are not the greatest thing in the whole world. We don't have to live or die on all these studies that say, yes, they're helpful or yes, they're not helpful. But they, you know, every long-term study shows that masks probably have some effect. And it's like, I remember when seatbelts were introduced in cars, and there was a huge hue and cry.
Fighting against seatbelts.
Against seatbelts. And so you can always muster an argument that, oh, you know, that's dangerous. But we as a society have decided that we can mandate public safety issues. Mm-hmm. And guess what? You better have a seatbelt on in your car now.
Right.
You know, and we can mandate airbags. Mm-hmm. And we can mandate that you can't drive drunk, even though you'd love to.
Right.
So the idea that we can't mandate for the public good, sorry, you can't go 100 miles an hour, although lots of people are doing that now.
Right.
So, you know, I have an associate in Toronto who, when they were really shut down, you were allowed out of your residence 1 hour per week to go get groceries.
Wow.
And they tracked you on your cell phone.
Oh my goodness.
And to get around it, people would leave their cell phones in, in their house. And they knew that the cell phone, you know, was always there. And they go, yeah, that's funny. That person has to go out. And yeah, so that's draconian. That's horrible. But, you know, they shut it down. Mm. You know, we used to feel so sorry for Italy, all these poor Italians singing from their balconies, but they shut it down.
And now they're better now.
And now they're better.